I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Planning Commission. Today is Thursday, September 20th, 2012. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next is the roll call.
Commissioner Daniels.
Present.
Commissioner Sheeler.
Present.
Commissioner Solomon.
Present.
Vice Chair West.
Here.
Chair Wallace. Is absent.
Okay, next is the public forum, an opportunity for the public to comment on any non-agenda item relevant to the city, but I don't think we have anyone. So on to the next. Can we have the clerk read the agenda item, please?
Is amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
I guess, are you Madam Vice Chairman? Madam Chairman? Madam Vice Chairman, there are no changes to the agenda.
Okay. So if that's the case, then I will ask if there are any declarations from the Planning Commission.
I just wanted to say that I did participate in a meeting with the subcommittee of the Green Building Group of the with the City Council, along with Commissioner Solomon.
Thank you.
All right, in that case, we'll move on to our staff presentation. Oh, one more item before the presentation. We will, can I get a motion to approve the minutes of September 5th?
I'll move to approve those minutes.
I'll second.
Okay. The minutes have been approved, and in that case, then we'll go on to the staff presentation.
May we have a vote?
Oh, sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that is unanimous. All right, now it's time for the staff presentation.
Madam Chairman, actually, we need to read the item into the record first. If the clerk could do that, please.
Item B is Item B1, public hearing on the Green Building Program.
Madam Chairman, members of the Commission, members of the public, this is the probably about the fourth time or at least third time you have seen this item. It is about 2 years in the making. It's from a grant from Southern California Edison, and a lot of work has gone into this. We're really happy to be here and proud of what has been done. This item was last reviewed by the Commission on June 28th. It was a joint meeting with City Council. As Commissioner Sheeler just said, there was a subcommittee, Council subcommittee meeting on September 11th that two of our commissioners had been invited to participate in, not as committee members, but as participants. And there have also been quite a number of meetings. There's a staff green team. There's an external green building committee. And a lot of work and thought has gone into this, and we're really pleased to be here. In terms of the presentation, Senior Planner Cindy Moore will do the presentation. We also have Jim Guerra to my left, is our building official. He has been very involved. And Walker Wells from Global Green USA, who's very knowledgeable about these sorts of ordinances. And he will, both of them will help answer questions. But Ms. Moore will make the presentation. Just we'll start with a quick reminder about what is the policy basis for this. talk about how the program has been developed over the last 2 years. We've had two City Council Planning Commission workshops, just a reminder of the evolution of the program, thanks to those two workshops, and then finally, what is the recommended program? So with that, I'll turn it over to Cindy Moore. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Sorry. So as Pat mentioned, just a quick reminder in terms of the policy basis of why we're engaged in this effort. The city has demonstrated leadership by embedding numerous policies into the general plan that promote energy efficiency and water conservation and recycling, that sort of thing. Specifically, there is an implementation program, IP9C, that calls for the establishment of green building standards and processes. It requires the adoption of a green building program to encourage the use of green building materials and energy efficiency measures in new construction. The city has also shown commitment by prioritizing these goals in its strategic plan. Specifically, there's objective 6.15, which calls for the promotion of green, sustainable, energy-efficient practices at City Hall and in the community. And then, in addition to these stated goals of the state has adopted its own long-term energy efficiency strategic plan for California. And the state's vision for local governments is that we'll be leaders in using energy efficiency to reduce energy use in our own facilities and throughout our communities. So this really puts the city in a unique position to implement a long-term program that institutionalizes energy efficiency and sustainability through adoption of a green building program. So in terms of the program development process that Pat was talking about that's been going on for the past couple of years, there were many people involved in addition to the green building team that Pat mentioned here. Jim and Walker were instrumental in getting us here tonight. But we also created a city staff green team, and this included representatives from the planning department, the building department, public works, neighborhood services, the city attorney's office, all representatives who may be involved in implementation of the program and who were knowledgeable about how that program might affect or be affected, might affect the city processes. We also created what was called the Green Ribbon Committee, and this included representatives in the private sector, design, build, developers, the environmental advocacy groups, other jurisdictions and institutions, and they were also instrumental in getting us here tonight. So I certainly want to extend a big thank you to all of those folks. I know you saw some of them at the joint session. They're not here tonight, I don't believe, but their input really did help us, you know, get to this hopefully more effective and successful program. We did meet with both of those two committees, four meetings each, between October of 2011 and May of this year. Additionally, the prior planning director, myself and Walker, met with smaller subgroups of the Green Ribbon Committee or individual members just to help us gain further insight and feedback on the program development process. After the third committee meeting in March of this year, the Community Environmental Council and the Goleta Valley Chamber of Commerce hosted an issue and policy roundtable for their members, and so that gave us an opportunity to provide an update on the development process at that point in time and get their feedback prior to coming to the joint City Council Planning Commission workshop, which the first one was held in March. And that is when we basically had a draft program framework to date. And we heard a lot of feedback at that joint session. Basically summarized here, a voluntary program was preferred over a mandatory program. We heard that we should not burden the mom and pop applications or the tenant improvements because these were deemed different than new development. There was concern expressed over the mandatory third-party verification and mandatory performance deposits that were discussed at that time. And then there was a desire to continue public outreach. So staff at that point then went back and revised the program approach based on the input we received. And we went back to both the staff team and the Green Ribbon Committee for their feedback on our revised approach. That revised approach was received positively, and so we felt happy to come back to the second joint workshop and present that program to both the City Council and Planning Commission. The revised approach, as you probably recall, was mostly a voluntary program, and we did hear consensus regarding the revised approach, and that did include support from the Green Ribbon Committee members. We had an initial discussion regarding incentives, and we did hear support for a policy to require that city buildings be LEED certified at the silver level. And then, as you already heard, we just recently held a meeting of the Standing Committee, City Council Standing Committee for Energy and Green Issues on September 11th. The City Council members were in attendance, as well as Commissioner Sheeler and Solomon. And we, at that point, presented the draft policy and ordinance, which is basically what you're going to hear more about tonight. We received from the Standing Committee a unanimous support for the draft documents and received concurrence from the Planning Commissioners there as well. So now I'll try to describe in more detail the implementing documents for the Green Building Program that we discussed at that Standing Committee meeting. And basically, there are three components to the program. The first is a policy for city buildings, and that's included in your attachment 2. There is an ordinance for non-city buildings, and that's included in your attachment 3. And then there's associated standards and incentives for those non-city buildings, which is in attachment 4. So focusing for a moment on the policy for city buildings, this document in attachment 2 carries forth the direction that we received at the second joint workshop, which is basically to require LEED certification at the silver level, and that would be mandatory for all new city buildings, and we're proposing that that apply to buildings that are 2,000 square feet or larger, conditioned space. There's also reference to major renovations and additions. And in this instance, we would recommend that LEED checklists be used as guidelines rather than requirements to enhance the green building measures in those renovations or additions. And then we also allow for certain exceptions in the policy for new construction to meet these requirements should there be some conflict with historic preservation criteria or some funding issue, conflict with adopted regulations, et cetera. So the next component of the program applies to the non-city buildings, and this is an ordinance that's in attachment 3. And this really creates the framework for incorporating the voluntary and mandatory green building measures into the design and construction of non-city buildings. It also specifies that standards and incentives be established by resolution, and that is that resolution is your attachment 4. So whether certain voluntary or mandatory components apply for the non-city buildings depends upon whether a project falls into one of two categories. The first is what we're calling non-covered projects, and this is a slightly different term than what you heard at the joint workshop when we were calling them ministerial and quasi-judicial projects. Basically, these are the projects that the decision to regarding approval is dictated by state law. So if they meet the findings, city must approve the project. And these are land use permits, development plans, modifications, that sort of thing. This is really 90% of the applications the planning department sees. The second category are what we're calling covered projects, and these are projects where any planning entitlement application that's requiring a legislative action by the City Council. So in this instance, the city would have full discretion whether to approve or deny the request. It's something that's typically extraordinary. And examples would be a general plan amendment, a rezone, a specific plan, that sort of thing. And it's really something that the city is giving the developer. And this is probably currently about 10% of our applications. So the first project category, if you're a non-covered project, again, these would be the land use permits, development plans, that sort of thing. The program is entirely voluntary. And given that, they would be, any of these applications would be subject to CalGreen and REACH code as it applies, as it would apply to them. We also want to make a proactive effort to make available access to the many great programs and resources that are available in the community. So, for example, there's a lot of best practices out there. The Built Green Santa Barbara program through the Santa Barbara Contractors Association has a resource center in Santa Barbara. There are certainly technical assistance available through the Regional Innovative Building Review Program, which we've spoken about. This is the voluntary program that this County of Santa Barbara manages. It's a committee that includes architects, landscape architects, engineers, builders, energy modelers, all who volunteer their time and expertise to advise applicants on how they can make their project more energy efficient and sustainable. So we think that's a great resource that folks could perhaps like to take advantage of, and it's voluntary. So we want to just make a more proactive effort to let people know about various rebates and financing options that are out there through other programs in the community like Energy Upgrade California or the Empower SBC program through the county. And then we'll talk about incentives at a later point, but so there is incentives that are available to these non-covered projects or would be available. So if we're talking about the covered projects, though, there is a mandatory component, and we're calling that mandatory component CalGreen Plus, in addition to an incentive portion, which would be a part of the voluntary certification program. But again, I'll discuss that a little bit later. So again, we want the covered projects to be able to obviously meet the requirements of CalGreen and the REACH code if it applies, and then also have access to all of these resources that are out there, and I won't belabor that point. So CalGreen Plus, this is basically a slate of items or requirements that must be met in addition to the existing CalGreen mandatory requirements. They go above and beyond the existing CalGreen component. So, for example, the first one, 65% construction demolition diversion. Currently, under CalGreen, that requirement is 50%. So these are all just slightly more than the existing requirements. That 65% would be consistent with a C&D ordinance that's currently in the works at the city, so we're coordinating with our solid waste folks and community services. It would include a 40% landscape water use reduction, a 30% internal water use reduction. Currently, that's 20% under CalGreen, 90% low volatile organic compound flooring. Currently, that requirement is 50%. Solar ready, meaning provision of electrical conduit from the roof to an electric meter, electrical vehicle readiness, excuse me, and then the beauty of this approach was that we based it on the existing CalGreen framework after hearing the feedback from the first workshop. So there's no expense associated with the third party verification that had caused some concern at that meeting. The ordinance does allow for certain exemptions to be approved in the event that, there again, there's a conflict with historic preservation criteria. If for some reason it would jeopardize grant funding or joint funding with other jurisdictions, if the project is primarily intended to be used for storage or equipment purposes, if it should conflict with existing regulations, if the scope of the project is so limited that the minimum number of mandatory measures needed for compliance couldn't be achieved, or if there is provision of some alternate methods that perhaps are more beneficial than the adopted measures. So there is some items that can provide an out should there be necessary. So again, on the covered projects, there is an option for one to perhaps pursue incentives. In this case, one would need to achieve voluntary certification through LEED, Built Green, or Greenpoint Rated if they were going to take advantage of those incentives. In this case, we would require a third-party verification because that's part of those systems, as well as a refundable deposit. And this is because the benefits of the incentives that would be granted really would be potentially received prior to the building permit. So probably during the entitlement process, they would receive these benefits. So we would be determining during staff's development of the administrative processes and procedures what exactly that refundable deposit would be. Right now, it's probably in the range between $15,000 and $75,000. It could be more, depending on the complexity of the project. And generally, this is based on the cost to certify through the LEED rating system. So now we'll get into the incentive portion. And again, access to certain incentives are based on the project category, so whether a project is a covered project or a non-covered project. And we're going to talk about structural incentives, which are modifications to the review processes, the financial incentives, or technical and marketing assistance. So the structural incentives that are identified in the staff report and in the attachment 4 include concurrent processing through the planning and building departments. And this would be for the fixed fee land use permits only. So this is typically in addition to a residence or a brand new residence. Priority processing in planning and building for applications. And this is relative to quote unquote non-green projects, projects that aren't pursuing inclusion of these measures in their projects. And then expedited building plan check. So the proposal is to decrease the review time from 15 to 7 business days. And then, as mentioned in the staff report, staff recommends that the incentives that perhaps relate to modifications to zoning standards occur during the creation of the new zoning code, because there really is going to be a much more in-depth public outreach workshop analysis process there that would go on, and we think it's more appropriate to have those incentives related to those standards determined as part of that hearing process. Moving on to potential financial incentives. Currently, we are proposing a 50% rebate on the fixed fee land use permits, and we're actually, and this will be discussed at the end, I do have some an errata sheet, but we are proposing that such a rebate for 50% of the fixed fee only apply to the land use permit and not the DRB fee. And this is because we did work with our finance director and confirm that there is about $10,000 available in our unassigned general fund reserve for the 2012-2013 budget year that we could utilize for such an incentive. So we recognize this isn't a huge number of projects, and we'd look at it sort of as a pilot program. And in order to perhaps allow a few more projects to participate, we would want to just limit that fixed fee rebate to the land use permits only and not the DRB fee. Currently, a new single family home fixed fee permit is $1,536, in addition to single family homes are $773. So if you take the larger of that amount, we're probably looking at around 13 projects that could take advantage of that incentive. And then we also discussed the potential for a fee reduction during the clearance process, and this is post-discretionary approval, and it really would be directed at the larger projects or applications to encourage them to get certification through a green building rating system. And we would propose that that be capped at a certain amount. We've mentioned 10,000 per project, perhaps some percentage of that fee, but capped at 10,000. And then we do have a recommendation, because there aren't current unassigned dollars available for such a thing, that allocation for such an incentive be considered by the City Council during their next budget cycle. And then the last financial incentive discussed is a modification in how the building permit fees are charged for solar installations. So currently it's by valuation, and the modification would be to a fixed fee. And this would require a modification to the fee resolution, and we would expect that to go to the City Council in October. And then the last group of incentives would be technical and marketing assistance. We already talked about the Innovative Building Review Program and the best practices resources that we would make available here at the city. And then we would hope to also institute recognition programs, and there's a million different options, but the kinds of things could include presentation of resolutions by the City Council, awards, press releases for projects, notification on our website, that sort of thing. So just to recognize that people are actually going above and beyond and making an effort to do that. So this slide is just a summary of whether the program would be mandatory or voluntary based on the type of project. So on the left, you'll see if you are requesting a legislative action, the upper left, yes, there would be a mandatory component. That mandatory component would be the CalGreen Plus standards that we've identified. And then there's a voluntary portion, which is if you'd like to pursue incentives, we want to incentivize you to do third-party green building rating system certification. And if you're not requesting a legislative action, there's no mandatory component whatsoever. It's all voluntary program, but we would want to incentivize the applicants to achieve the standards of CalGreen Plus, CalGreen, or the REACH code, depending on their starting point. In other words, the applicable regulations for whatever their project is. Because certain projects, the REACH code does apply or doesn't, so depending on where their starting point is, we've identified in the incentives table and attachment for what they would need to achieve in order to receive that incentive. So the next steps are hopefully to proceed to the City Council with your recommendation on October 2nd. And then we would need to have a second reading with the City Council, because they would be adopting an ordinance. And then we would be moving into the implementation phase of the program. So we would be developing the administrative policies and procedures for things such as priority processing and the refundable deposit. We would be developing the marketing and outreach materials and tailor those to the various applicants and audiences that would be hopefully taking advantage of the program, and then determining the appropriate tracking and reporting mechanisms so we can adjust the program as necessary as time goes on. So the recommendations, which are included at the beginning of your staff report, include four resolutions. The first is Attachment 1. This is related to the CEQA exemption. The second relates to Attachment 2, and this is a policy for the city buildings. The third is in Attachment 3, and this is the ordinance for the non-city buildings. And then the fourth is Attachment 4, which are those standards and incentives for compliance for the non-city buildings. And then we have three additional recommendations that include allocation of that unassigned reserve fund, the $10,000 in the 2012 to 2013 year, to allow for rebates on the fixed fee land use permits, 50% of that fee for each permit, as well as consideration for the use of funds in the future for incentives in the next budget cycle. And this was, again, related to the land use clearance process post-entitlement for the larger projects. And then also to consider incentives related to the zoning standards occur during preparation of the new zoning code. And then I do have, prior to any recommendations, I do just need to read into the record the errata sheet that was handed out earlier. So that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Moore. Any questions from the Planning Commission? Okay.
Was this before we were going to open the public hearing? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll wait to see what speakers we have then.
Then I'll go ahead and open the public hearing. I don't think we...
Vice Chair West, no speaker slips.
Okay. In that case, we'll move back to questions. Commissioner Sheeler?
I just have a real quick question. I was wondering if Mr. Guerra or Mr. Wells was going to speak to us tonight as well.
We're available to answer any questions that you have. We didn't have anything to add to the presentation.
Okay, thank you. I'll have a question for Mr. Wells later.
Well, I guess then I'll go ahead. I have several questions here, and let's see who might be able to best respond. First of all, I wanted to thank the leadership of the City of Goleta for adopting Strategic Goal 6.15. I think that's very far-sighted of the City of Goleta, and really appreciate that opportunity to participate in this. This is probably for staff. Other than a potential new city hall and a fire station in West Goleta, what other buildings is the city considering building? Because in other words, we're talking about LEED certification for new city buildings, so I'm trying to anticipate what those might be.
Well, there is. I know the Kellogg Park may have some small facilities, or there may be some smaller buildings associated with public works storage and that sort of thing.
More than 2,000 square feet? Or not just
likely.
Storage?
No. Yeah. And the city will take over ownership of the community center. I think that happens next year.
Okay. That kind of moves into the next area, not new city buildings, but city-owned potential for major renovations of buildings that the city already owns, not as contemplating buildings, such as a new council chambers and a community center. Are there any other major renovations that may be contemplated other than a new council chambers and a new community center?
Commissioner Sheeler, I'm not aware of any, but we're not necessarily privy to what the city's plans are, you know, long term. But the idea of a new city hall is definitely one that the city has acquired the parcel just to our north. And the community center, that is something that is in the process of converting to the city. And one of the challenges there, I think, is it's such a heavily used building that it's difficult to, you know, those programs are so integral to the community. But upgrades inevitably are going to occur. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a historic building. I don't know if it is, but it's one of the older former elementary schools in the community. So we're not sure what's coming, but the whole way this is set up is that clearly on new buildings, the assumption would be they'd be LEED Silver unless there was some extenuating reason not to do that. And on renovations and rehabs, it's a little more difficult, but the intent is the LEED guidelines would be followed. Do whatever we can. You know, there's always a cost-benefit analysis, but that's the intent. Take the long view and look at the savings from lower energy use, et cetera. But a lot of considerations when you're dealing with an existing building.
Right. Thank you. I'm going to now refer to Exhibit A, which is towards the end of the staff report, and it's talking about green building standards of compliance for covered and non-covered projects. And under the ones under the covered legislative projects is solar ready, provide electrical conduit from roof to electric meter. And I'm just wondering whether this will be a wholehearted effort or a partial effort in terms of this We have situations where solar may be available for portions of the project, larger or smaller, and just wondering whether the standard would be met by meeting just a small amount of, let's say, a carport, a couple of stalls would be covered with solar, and that would then meet that covered legislative requirement versus actually designing a project so that most, or if not all, of the carports would be solar ready. You know, versus a sort of half-hearted versus a full effort to meet that consideration.
The this program, this particular solar ready, is simply the conduit and does not address any of those more pressing issues to be solar ready. It's simply providing during construction the conduit already. It is a minimal effort to be solar ready.
So the conduit would be run, let's say, to any potential place where solar panels might be located?
Yes.
But that could be a whole array of carport coverage on many aspects of a project like we saw on several recently. So would the conduit just need to be able to run to one portion of the carport or to all portions of the carport in order to meet the intent of this?
It would need to run to each separate carport. So in if the carport was of a large size, a single conduit, but if there were multiple carports, as some of our projected projects mm-hmm. are, they would have to have the conduit to each carport, as an example.
Thank you for that clarification. And maybe a question for either one of Mr. Wells or Mr. Guerra or the staff. Just wondering, how can property owners be incentivized to make green tenant improvements? I know that's something that is discussed in the staff report and it's largely voluntary. So what, in your professional opinion, can the city of Goleta do with 90% of the projects falling into this kind of category? What can property owners be, how can property owners be incentivized to make green tenant improvements, passing those benefits along?
Property, well, I think I would say, you know, there's the areas of the building that the property owners control, hallways, lobbies, things like that. I think the owners would be incentivized through similar strategies as to what's been proposed, you know, priority or expedited processing or some sort of fee waiver. Now, the tenant improvements in the tenant spaces, I think those are usually initiated by the tenants themselves. Like, you know, say I have a company and I'm going to move into floor two of a building over here and take over 20,000 square feet. I think I would actually be the one coming to the city with my architect to put forward those permits and have the work done in the building. So I think the incentives would need to be in place, and then the fact that they exist would need to be communicated to people at the time that they sign their leases. That's
with a triple net lease, the responsibility would fall on the tenant or the landlord?
See, when I'm thinking of tenant improvements, I'm thinking of, you know, carpet, paint, partitions, those types of things. You're hitting the nail on the head that when we get into building systems and energy, water, then those are going to really be the purview of the building owner.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking about, creating the incentives for them to see that there is value in pursuing this.
Yeah, I think in that regard, probably the most effective approach is to be this liaison between the owner and the utility programs, because there are, you know, Edison does have programs to encourage people to do exactly these type of things. But the challenge is often that the building owners don't know that they're there or don't understand the value. So I think this, you know, there are some instances where cities have more actively promoted the utility programs and then seen a significant increase in participation. Because otherwise you're sort of assuming that, you know, the owner or the property manager on behalf of the owner is going to be proactive enough to identify right. those incentives and navigate through them. So a lot of times it's the city doing the marketing, maybe with the chamber, and then, you know, just trying to streamline it so there's a liaison at the utility.
An additional strategy on that could come with our electronic permitting process. It's possible to set up the permitting that has on certain types of applications to green building measures. It would not necessarily require them, but as you go through the permitting process, as you go to a green a roof, it would provide links, for instance, to the Edison rebate program for a cool roof. So we are looking down the line on our permitting system to ask those questions during the electronic permitting.
Thank you. That sounds innovative. Just a few more questions here, Madam Vice Chair. Regarding thresholds, we've got percentages that for covered projects that are CalGreen Plus. When are those thresholds and those percentages reviewed for adequacy to determine whether they need to be adjusted?
Maybe I'm not completely following the question. The thresholds for...
Yeah, we have certain percentages associated with 65% for construction waste, 40% landscape water, 30% interior water, certain percentages, thresholds, and just wondering when are those reviewed to make sure that those are still the thresholds that we want to be targeting to.
Yeah, I would expect that they would get reviewed every 3 years with the code adoption cycle. So, for example, what's proposed now exceeds the current CalGreen standard, but then there will, and I actually looked at what's proposed for the next iteration of CalGreen, because I'm on the state advisory committee. So I think these percentages that you refer to are going to have about a four-year shelf life, and then they may need to be revisited, which would happen when your building official looks at, you know, what's being put forward by the Building Standards Commission as the code, you know, the next time around. So we're going to get a new code in 13. I guess this would be like in, you know, 16, you would need to look at those and see if they haven't just been superseded by the state.
Madam Chairman, can I just point out, anyone who has the staff report, we're on big page 66, Exhibit A. It's attachment 4, Exhibit One, sorry about that, but page 66. Thank you.
Commissioner Schuler, may I offer additional on that? We would expect with the adoption of the Green Building Program that each project is reviewed twice during the process, is reviewed during the plan check process. There will be a checklist determination, and then it's reviewed again during construction, because actually the final approval of this actually occurs during construction. It'll be the responsibility of the building inspector, for instance, to review the diversion report, although it's reviewed again by our public works section. So we actually, as part of our inspection process, go through them again to verify that all of this is constructed per now initially CalGreen, and now what we're referring to as CalGreen Plus. If the city council does not adopt a green building program, we'd still be required to get CalGreen during both plan check and inspection.
Could I just, it was a little out of order, but go back to the solar ready question that you had. There may be some benefit to propose that an area be designated that would be able to offset some portion of the building's estimated annual energy use. I never thought of this carport condition. I always perceived of the conduit going to the roof, and that there'd be enough space on the roof to do, say, 25% of the building's energy use. But, you know, if somebody said, oh, I'll just put it over to that carport that's covering four cars, I agree with you. That's it's a little small potatoes relative to what we're trying to accomplish, which is to put the infrastructure in place. So maybe that needs a little more articulation.
I wanted to move next to the area of incentives, and the reason that there's incentives is because people that are doing projects now, in many cases, aren't willing to adopt this because the costs exceed the benefits. And so with incentives, hopefully that initially creates the critical mass to level the playing field. Eventually, with technological fixes and maybe increases in the cost of energy, there'll be an overlap where these kinds of things that we're talking about actually pencil out and incentives aren't really needed. So what kind of indices will the city be using to determine when and how incentives should be phased out and not carried on in perpetuity?
I mean, I can jump in and just say we hadn't really thought it through that far, but I would imagine you come up with some metric and say, when, you know, X percentage of the projects, you know, significantly sized projects choose to do, you know, to get certified on their own behalf, then you would get a sense that there's a certain degree of market saturation or, you know, such that the incentives aren't used. But, I mean, the reality is it's been hard to find the ability to provide any incentives that are attractive enough to motivate somebody to pursue certification, and not to sort of venture into behavioral economics, but there's kind of the cost-benefit aspect, but there's also the just resistance to change practice. And so our sense is that maybe by offering a relatively small incentive, it can still be motivational to encourage somebody to try the new thing and find out that the new thing isn't as challenging as they thought, and kind of set in motion the wheels of change.
Madam Chairman, also adding to that is we are adopting the ordinance and resolutions tonight, or recommending adoption of, and the administrative guidelines will be something that is worked out over the next few months. And we anticipate, we're not proposing those be adopted by resolution or ordinance. They are like a working, living, breathing document. And as the state of the art changes, we totally anticipate that will change. So we're not worried that tonight we have to identify every single incentive. There's a lot of other things that undoubtedly or hopefully will come along that we can add or change or delete or whatever.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have three remaining questions here. This is regarding Cal Green Plus and the mandatory component, and it talks about 40% landscape water use reduction. What is the calculation if the project is using reclaimed water for landscaping?
Excellent question. So the way it works now in the model landscape water use ordinance, it doesn't really give you a credit for reclaimed water. It just says all water is valuable and you should use less of it. I think partly because not every community has reclaimed water. So this has come up on several of my Lead for Homes projects. They say we're using reclaimed water, shouldn't we get credit for that? And I go, well, in Lead you get credit for it somewhere else, but your water efficiency doesn't factor in reclaimed water. So if you actually have access to this in your community, then you could say that use of reclaimed water would count. Basically, you would say 40% potable water use reduction, and just clarify it that way. So then if they were using reclaimed water, purple pipe, then they would effectively be exempt from this because they'd be at 100% non-potable water.
And we do have access to reclaimed water in certain parts of our city, and it probably would benefit our city if that could be expanded. Two last questions here. If adopted, where must, if these are ordinances are all adopted, where must a project be in the pipeline in order to be required to incorporate these new standards? Like who is in and who is out?
The traditional answer on that through the building code is plan check application. Basically, the plan check application date sort of determines where you are in the process on it. With it. Again, I think on voluntary compliance, there would be no sort of statute on that. But normally on the effective date of ordinance, it is building plan check determines the applicability to the ordinance.
I'll just say other communities have gone further back and made it your, planning application date. So that's, you can pick it. So usually there's kind of a waiting period. And then you'll say it's either at building permit, plan check application, or it'll be development permit application.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, the legal answer to it is once the building permit is issued is when you vest within the project. Up until that point, all applications are subject to any change in law. So if the Planning Commission wishes to make a recommendation, as has been enunciated by the consultants, then you should make that recommendation as part of your advice giving to the City Council. If you want that date to be further back in time, for example, at the time that an application is deemed complete or that it's in plan check or something along those lines, at that point the project would not be subject to the new law. But the legal answer is unless the building permit has been issued, all applications are subject to changes in the law.
Well, I'm hopeful that this, whether mandatory or voluntarily, will be as inclusive as possible. So we'll leave that for the City Council, I guess, to make that best determination, unless any of the other planning commissioners want to weigh in on that and have an opinion on that. And my last question then is, if a project adopts green building standards, will there be a notified Class 4 beneficial impact as a result of that? Let's say there's a mitigated negative declaration or an environmental impact report, and the project does adopt green building standards, will there be a finding that the project does contain Class 4 beneficial impacts?
Madam Chairman, Commissioner Sheeler, the way I would see the benefit of doing this would be if there were a Class 1 impact and statement of overriding. There's also quite a few policies in the general plan that speak to energy efficiency, so it'd be pretty easy to find a project consistent. But surely Class 4 beneficial impacts, if there were an environmental NEIR, that would be noted. I mean, there's several places where credit, if you will, would be given for taking these steps. We're trying to encourage them in any way we can.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I appreciate it.
Okay, excellent questions as always. Commissioners, anyone else?
What kind of allowance is there for covering publicity and outreach to the community?
We don't have any budget or fee identified. I think that basically it would be covered by the staff assigned to facilitating the green building program, so it would be covered by the city at that point. But I think basically the types of things we're envisioning right now would be fairly low cost at this time.
All right, then. I have one comment and a couple questions then. I'd like to suggest to staff, first of all, I think the reclaimed water thing is a really important issue that I'm glad Commissioner Sheeler brought up, because we do have that resource in our community. And it's my impression that there is a lot of extra reclaimed water that goes unused. I don't know if that's true or not, but would staff be able to check with the Goleta Water District? Because I think if the reclaimed water is in high demand, we should still be, you know, using it wisely. But it's my impression, I don't know if this is correct or not, that a lot of it does go unused. And if that's the case, then perhaps, you know, there should just be an open budget, water budget on that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of, if it's unused, you would encourage people to use it and tap into that system. Same time, you don't want to be profligate with reclaimed water, you know, and have some sort of jungle landscape just because you have tons and tons of water. But if we're at a point where there's more than can be used and it's just being dumped in, you know, the creek and ending up in the river, then, or into the ocean, then I think you could almost incentivize the use of it, of saying like 40% potable water use reduction, or just saying 40% water use reduction or use of reclaimed water. Keep it simple for now.
Absolutely. Okay, so thanks for that. And I just wanted to ask a couple questions about the third-party verification. So I see that for the voluntary certification, you're asking for third-party verification by either LEED Green Building Council or Build Green or Greenpoint Rated Certification, which obviously is important to prove that people have in fact met the requirements that they've set out to meet. I'm wondering, who is the verification agency for the CalGreen Plus mandatory component?
Building official in the building department.
Okay. If that's the case, then I'm wondering about the city of Goleta and their our agreement to go LEED Silver, which I think is great. And do we want to leave it open that the city of Goleta could achieve a LEED Silver equivalent without actual third-party verification if the building official is, in fact, up to doing that third-party verification? Because that would save the city of Goleta quite a bit of money.
If you're asking me if I think that's a good idea, I would say that no, I don't think that's a good idea. There's not a great track record of this use of LEED as a guideline and self-certifying or meeting the intent or finding some expert who says it's good enough. There's a lot of value that comes out of that. There's a lot of rigor that comes out of the third-party program, and then therefore value that you're actually getting what is being alleged in the design. I could, you know, delineate a number of other reasons why I think utilizing the third-party programs would actually be in the best interest of the city for its, you know, relatively small number of civic buildings, and to not try and work in this middle nebulous space of of doing it ourselves and kind of deciding that it's pretty much the same as LEED. I don't think that's effective.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I can definitely see how that would be the case, but I can also see the other side of it, where if you have a design team that's very committed to LEED and really familiar with LEED, that the money that would be spent for the verification could potentially go into actual improvements instead of paying to the Green Building Council.
Could, however, you know, there's about 60% of LEED that's in design and about 40% that's in construction. And so there's a bit of a misperception that you can get everything correct in the documents and they'll just go build the building exactly like the documents. And my experience is that there's submittals, there's change orders, there's requests for information, and that things do change in construction. And I don't necessarily think that the building department has that full breadth of experience to track all of that, to make sure that what's in the design actually is what gets built and what gets delivered to the city. And LEED, you know, covers that full spectrum. And so you do sort of, again, get delivered to you what you thought you were going to get at the end of the design process.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I can see the logic of that, and I certainly can't imagine anyone in the building department wants to take on that kind of verification, because it is an immense amount of work, and that money we pay to LEED is, you know, provides a real service. But at the same time, I know this is, you know, a significant cost, so I just wanted to bring that up. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Mayor? Thank you. Mr. Wells, I notice you've got somewhat of a large resume of jurisdictions that you work with. My question is, where does this particular proposal that we're seeing tonight, where do we stack up in between those 10 or 12 or even more of the jurisdictions that you've had the ability to work with?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple metrics. So I might say on clarity, you're sort of at the top. There isn't this kind of muddled meet the intent of strategy that a lot of cities, that I encouraged a number of cities to use several years ago, to use LEED as a guideline, but, you know, have somebody else decide that it's good enough. So I think you've got some really clear boundaries, like either you're a covered project or you're a non-covered project. And if you're a covered project, this is what applies. If you're non-covered, here's what applies. Here's the incentives you get if you do something voluntarily. Now, I think clarity, which means that it can be effectively implemented. In terms of rigor, in terms of what you're requiring people to use, I'd say you're in the maybe over the 50th percentile or something like that. You know, there are a number of cities that require a lot more, that require LEED certified or LEED silver for any major project. And at this point in time, we're not doing that. We're just asking for a small number of additional items and only incentivizing the third party certification. Here's maybe a better way to explain it. 2 weeks ago, I was in Cupertino, you know, another sort of moderately sized city. They decided that any new development over 25,000 square feet needs to get LEED certified or Greenpoint rated. And that's what their stakeholder group was willing to support and what had the, you know, support of the Planning Commission and the Council. So I'd say that's significantly more rigorous in its standards than what you're reviewing right now. At the same time, we proposed that type of a strategy to our stakeholders, and they felt that Goleta wasn't ready for that yet. So I always remind folks that this is just the beginning and you can increase the standards over time. My example of that is Pasadena, that started with asking for meet the intent of LEED certified and eventually has moved to just requiring LEED silver for projects over 50,000 square feet.
Can we talk about another metric here, the 10-90 split, voluntary mm-hmm. versus mandatory? How does that stack up with your experience?
I think it's just new. I haven't seen things separated that way before. It's usually done by size, by square footage. Mm-hmm. So often the conversation is, should we be at 10,000 or should we be at 25 or should we be at 50? How many projects will we capture, you know, when we move this line? But in talking things through with Cindy and Steve Chase when he was here, this seemed to be like a good threshold, mm-hmm. back to this clarity question, just saying, okay, these ones that have the projects that are, you know, the covered projects, the legislative projects, are clearly more substantial,
right.
bigger budget, more process. It seemed reasonable to require that they achieve at a higher level. And throughout our process, there was a concern about imposing too stringent requirements on smaller projects and having that be, right. you know, onerous. So that was how we ended up with this.
So, and I appreciate that, and I'll ask this last question about this metric, the mom and pop metric. I'm happy to see it in here. You know, it's I'm glad it's being recognized. And your experience with other jurisdictions?
Well, the same issue has come up. You know, what about the retired couple that just wants to add on a little, you know, a room for the grandkids on their house? We don't want to trigger an entire remodel that has to get LEED certified, or the small business owner on Main Street. This is usually why we end up with the square footage threshold, you know, under 2,500 square feet or an addition of less than, you know, 500 square feet. This is usually how this is handled, with sort of a size metric, or that you'll say, and this is how the code works, like you only have to address the things that are within the scope of your project. That's another way to, you know, whatever, make sure that somebody doesn't change their toilet and have to start changing their air conditioner and, you know, replacing all their windows.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the other thing is there's the number of projects, but then there's also how big they are. So maybe that 10% of all projects equals 50% of the square footage or 70% of the potential square footage.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes that metric isn't really telling the whole story.
Thank you. And then for Mr. Guerra, I'm getting the sense that you might be leading the permit tracking system, and it's Genesis through the city building planning department. Is that correct?
That is not correct. I'm not leading it. I have some input to the process. I'm actually coming up with some of these ideas on other systems I'm working with, so when we get to designing it, there's a number of things we can do on that, and recently worked on a program where we actually put links into the program as you go through it.
Mm-hmm.
The electronic permitting or online permitting, there are limitations in the types of projects that you can do. You really couldn't do anything, for instance, that required a land use permit. By its nature, there are exempt projects on that. But there are issues that we thought in re-roofing, for example, that we could make some strong points for, say, a cool roof or something like that, acknowledging that decisions has probably already been made by the time they get on to the permitting process. But we thought continuing that process to always put that information out there would be a good step, and we're going to recommend it as we go forward on ours. But I am not the lead on the project.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I'm, you know, when we talk about tracking and the tracking that is, you know, perhaps proposed with the reporting of the information that is maybe put in these tracking systems, the need for additional fields perhaps in order to have information on the green building program and how it can be effective and whatnot. I think if there is an ability to include additional fields, you know, for this type of a program, you know, the more the better. And I know it can be cumbersome, no doubt, but I think this is clearly worthwhile, and, you know, it definitely has its followers, and I think it would be, you know, very important to have for the community.
Madam Chairman, Commissioner Daniels, just so you know, we have a contract first for planning, has a contract, and building and safety is part of planning, for a document imaging system, which is a Herculean task to clean up files so that good information goes in and good information will come out. And we also have a contract for a permit tracking system. And that will be very much a brainstorm, iterative, reiterative process. But we'll make note of that and make sure that's in there. Thank you.
Okay, any additional questions from the commission? No? In that case, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing and move on to Planning Commission deliberations.
Madam Vice Chair, thank you. I would like to extend my compliments and my appreciation to Senior Planner Moore for her stewardship of this process through over a very long period of time. And the task that's involved in taking sort of an amorphous group of information, a lot of diverse elements, and a lot of diverse constituencies, and bringing them together and coming to the point where we are, where we have these very concrete, this is a foundation that our city can build the go forward with additional green codes and so on and so forth. And I think that was a very difficult task, and you've done a really excellent job for the city. Thank you.
A few comments hearing as we enter our deliberations and discussion. Well, we talked about third-party inspections and documentation and verification of compliance. I guess it's just really important, and probably everybody already recognizes that there be some sort of cost containment associated with that, so that people that are trying to comply don't feel as if this has been something that has been too onerous. Whatever the city can do to create cost containment in this regard, I think, is effective in terms of having other people embrace this strategy. One thing that's going to be hugely important, I heard Mr. Guerra say that decisions largely are already made by the time of the permitting process, and that's great if you've got a good design team and they're already well aware of what's going on, but if they already have their minds made up and really aren't alert or aware to alternatives in building design, then these may be opportunities lost. It's going to be crucial, and I've seen it in the report, that you are just talking about training and orientation for the front counter staff and for your inspectors and your building and officials. So this is basically permeates through the entire city of Goleta, so that everybody is pulling in the right direction, so that when people come in from the front desk, they're made aware of these possibilities and encouraged to discover them as much as possible. One area that I think is really crucial, and also I addressed a couple times in the report, is the importance of the design review board, because they see more projects than we do, and they see them at more of the nascent portion where they're really conceptual and being considered. And I think it's just really important for that training and orientation to be part and parcel of the design review board, and people that participate on the design review board, that they understand the importance of this in terms of Goleta strategic goal 6.15. I think the Innovative Building Review Program is an incredible resource, and whatever can be done, whoever is offering the service, kudos to them, and whatever can be done to get people to acknowledge they exist and take advantage of that seems like it's really important. I want to switch now to the granting or the denial of exceptions. Apparently those will be done by the planning director. I think it's important that this process be transparent and that there be some sort of routine reporting of outcomes, so that it's just not hidden and buried somewhere. But we understand how this is working, and I think of our understanding of how this is working can somehow be tied to the granting and denial of exemptions. We will learn from those experiences. We talk about structural incentives, and one of the structural incentives is concurrent processing, and I can understand why that might be something that you would want to do. However, on a recent project, I had concerns about so-called concurrent processing when there was DRB review occurring concurrently with EIR preparation. Therefore, by the time the DRB had finished their considerations, they hadn't had the opportunity to understand the magnitude of the outcomes of the environmental impact report. And though that is concurrent processing, I don't think that creates the best outcome in that situation. And the last thing that I did want to mention, and it's just an idea, maybe it would fall under innovation, which would be the idea of a transfer of green development rights. And that would be where one site might be more suitable than another for taking on these kinds of green certifications and green building components. And maybe somebody might say, well, I don't know if I can do that here, but maybe I could do that somewhere else. Might that be suitable? Because there might be sites that are better suited to do certain things than a site that's coming up. And we may have some people in Goleta that have the ability to do that. So just something to explore. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
With all the respect to Councillor this evening, the way I see it, and maybe this is just a suggestion to the City Council, is that if it's mandatory, if you have a project that's mandatory, clearly there will be some development of the product that goes through the processes, the DRB processes, the planning processes, in order to get your approvals on the planning side. To be able to submit for building permit, get all the way to the end of building permit, and before you pull those permits, be slapped with additional requirements because the code has changed one way or another, just seems a little too onerous. My suggestion would be, you know, once you're in and deemed complete, there's really no deeming complete in building, I understand, but once you are in, your entire project is in the city's hands with respect to building permits, I think that's the time where, you know, you should be able to move through with that without having to fear something else coming your way, you know, at the 11th hour, at the 10th hour, at the 9th hour. I mean, there's potentially a lot of money involved in redesign and, you know, making things right again, and it just doesn't feel right from somebody who has to deal with that kind of stuff, and so I would throw that out there as a consideration. Thank you.
Okay, and we'll wrap this up. I'll just say I think this is going to be great for our community, and I'm really proud that Goleta has stepped up to do this. So it's time to make our motions. Would anyone like to start?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I just need to go over the errata sheet really quickly.
Please, yes.
Thank you. I have to get this in there. So this is the Saturday Night Live, Rosanna, Dana. If it isn't one thing, it's another. There's always something. Even whenever we look at these documents a million times, we always find mistakes. So the first item is on and the way we do it in Goleta, big page numbers, big page 53, item C. We need to change the section where it refers to the director to the city manager or designee. And this is the same for item D on big page 53, where it refers to denial of the exemption. And there's a reference to the director. We need to change that to city manager or designee to be consistent with the rest of the ordinance. And then the third item is on big page 63, section 1.A. And this was just a typo, basically. The sentence begins with, this resolution expresses, adopts, and we need to just get rid of the word expresses. The fourth item is on big page 67. This is relating to financial incentives, number four. And this is where I was mentioning during the presentation that we wanted to have a rebate for 50% of the land use permit fees only. So we would be just referencing the land use permit fixed fees and deleting the reference to the DRB fixed fee. And the last item is on big page 68, table C, which is the incentives for the minimum threshold required. There was a reference to 3 stars through the Built Green program with third-party verification. This is modified to 4 stars to receive the incentive because through that program, three stars does not require third-party verification. That occurs at the four-star level. So that's just a clarification there. And that concludes
quick
the note. Changes.
Ms. Saley, the first two on the errata, it just gave me pause just because those are something that can be tracked, you know, but perhaps within the system to be, and it would only take one field, you know, a yes, no, true, false, whatever it is. So anyway, just throw that out there.
All right. We're all set then. Time for our motions. Would anyone like to start?
Excuse me, are these two amended by this? Are these two resolutions amended?
Okay, we've got several to go through here, so I'll move to adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 12, next in line, entitled A Resolution Recommending that the City Council find the Green Building Program categorically exempt from additional CEQA review.
Okay, all in favor?
Second that motion.
Okay, thank you. We'll get this down. Seconded by Commissioner Solomon. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes unanimously.
I'll keep going here. Adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 12, next to line, entitled A Resolution Recommending that the City Council adopt a green building policy for new city building construction and major renovations and additions to existing city-owned and operated buildings.
Okay, I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, also passes unanimously.
Anybody else like to chime in? I'll keep going. Adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 12, next in line, entitled Resolution Recommending that the City Council adopt an ordinance amending the Goleta Municipal Code to add Section 15.12.020 through 15.12.90, mandating green building requirements for certain new construction and incentives for additional voluntary green building practices beyond existing regulations.
I'll second that.
Okay. Commissioners, who is in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Also passes unanimously.
All right. I'll defer to somebody else if they'd like to finish this off.
Adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 12, next in line, entitled A Resolution Recommending that the City Council adopt a resolution establishing green building standards for covered and non-covered projects defined in Goleta Municipal Code Chapter 15.12, and also identifying thresholds and incentives available to covered and non-covered projects for achieving voluntary green building measures.
I'll second that.
Okay, commissioners in commissioners who support?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, also passes unanimously.
I guess I'll keep going. Recommend that the City Council authorize allocation of $10,000 of available unassigned general fund reserve for fiscal year 2012-13 to the Green Building Program to fund rebates as incentives for the fixed fee land use permits and DRB fees as applicable. Is that correct?
Yeah, it would be with the amendment to delete the reference to the DRB fees.
With that amendment, as identified in attachment for table B.
Okay, I'll second. Commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Also unanimous. And I'll read off the final one here. Recommend that the City Council direct staff to analyze potential incentives relating to the 3D zoning standards, including open space requirement, floor area ratio, modifications to setbacks, height, parking, and density during preparation of the new zoning code. Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Okay. In favor?
Aye.
Still have number six.
Oh, thank you. Opposed? Okay. That also passes. That's number seven. I skipped one. I'm going to go back to number six. I'll make the motion to recommend that the City Council consider that in the fiscal year 2013 to 2015, budget process, allocation of funds to the Green Building Program for incentives to allow a reduction of Planning Department processing fees required for the land use permit clearance process as identified in Attachment 4, Table C. Second? Okay, in favor?
Madam Chairman,
yes.
Before you vote, there was a suggestion, I believe it was that table, on the 40% reduction in potable water or use of reclaimed water. I
okay.
believe that was, is that the correct table?
It's not the incentive, that would be the standards.
The point is, I think we want to make sure that's part of your motions wherever it belonged. So I think what we would, is it attachment 4?
Yes. Attachment 4, table A.
Okay. My apologies for interrupting. We should finish the vote on recommendation number 6 and then revisit 4 just to amend it. Thank you.
Okay. So we were going to vote on number 6. Commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Passes unanimously as well. So do we have to read into the record number 4 again, or can we just make a change?
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, just make a separate motion and make that recommendation if that's what you'd like to do.
I'd like to make a motion to revise number 4 as amended.
Seconded.
Commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Passes unanimously. I believe that concludes our motions. Yes? We make it through? Okay. Excellent. Moving on then to the director's report.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the commission. Staying on an energy kick, two nights ago, Tuesday night, the City Council adopted the Energy Efficiency Action Plan. So this is a big week for energy savings. And also, the City Council adopted a five-year extension on the contract the city has with Santa Barbara County to provide energy planning services through the energy division there. On a slightly different note, we just found out today that the regional housing needs assessment, the original allocation to Goleta of 979 units, this is for the 2014-2022 period, that is the city's allocation. And of that 79 units, 234 are to be very low, 157 low, 174 moderate, and 413 above moderate. And as I understand it, it's the inventory showing that we can produce this, not that units have to be occupied. And then what I have here, if everyone would grab one of these, this is a projection report, but it has draft on it because I need your input on something. First of all, though, and it's an item that's on here, is the planning process improvements. You recall that last meeting I handed out what we called part one, which dealt with the workload that the planning division, or department rather, is seeing, and staffing, and like minor permits are doubled from last year, and you know, EIRs, most communities have about 2. We have 8 going, and you know, it's pretty unprecedented. Just so you know, on October 2nd, the City Council will be seeing part 2 of that, which is the staffing issue. And of course, you know, planning's workload is the same as city attorney's workload, at least as it relates to land use, and public works as it relates to projects. So there are a lot of considerations there. And on this schedule here, this projection report, we originally had scheduled on October 8th. I mean, this is staff putting together the schedule and trying to keep meetings in balance, et cetera. And we were going to give you an overview of what's been, we've been presenting to the council and council's actions. And we had slated it for October 8th. At that time, we thought the Camino Real Hotel specific plan amendment would also be on that agenda, and that seemed pretty balanced. That item is going to be heard on October 22nd. And then the third item I show there, the Marriott Residence Inn project description presentation. This is similar to what Westar did. I believe Willow Springs 2 did this. That's pretty fluid as to when it can occur. It may well be the November 26th meeting. November 12th is Veterans Day, so there will not be a meeting. The reason I'm bringing this up is Chairman Wallace is on vacation, will not be at the October 8th meeting, but she will be at the October 22nd. And we were thinking that, depending on your schedules, it really would be best if we could have all five commissioners. And there's not a pressing deadline here, so our thought was, if it's all right with you, we will cancel the October 8th meeting, and on October 22nd, we'll do the planning process improvement, the Camino Real Hotel specific plan amendment, and I'm not sure if we'll have Marriott residents in. That might be quite a full meeting, but it depends on schedule. But if that's all right with you, that's what we'll do. I'll revise this tomorrow and send it around, you know, to you as well as members of the city staff. And then I think we can have all the commissioners participate in that discussion. And we would really rather that. And it seems like you totally agree. So this will be revised, and I'm sure there's going to be more things on it before too long. There's a lot coming through the pipeline. So we'll give you some other updates. We'll also extend this out into February because we are aware of some things coming. But that's all I have, unless you have any questions. Okay, thank you.
Planning Commission comments? I want to echo the discussion of I heard earlier, and thank staff for the staff report and these two gentlemen for really what I think is it was a robust discussion tonight. So appreciate it. I know others do too. Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay. I'll second. Let's go home. Thanks, everyone.
Aye.
Aye.